bangthebook.com.
Hello again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, January 5th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. So we're all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me on this Thursday broadcast. We've got two professional handicappers joining the show today. The first is Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com for this week's edition of Powers Picks. We'll chat FCS National Championship game, FBS National Championship game in the college football playoff with Alabama and Clemson. Also wild card weekend. And we'll go over some of those New Year's resolution type things that I've been doing with all the professional handicappers here. But we'll look exclusively at college football for Brad as we start looking ahead to the offseason and the prep period for him. Also, we've got a listener question regarding that. Coming up in the second part of today's show, Ralph Michaels of WagerTalk.com. We'll chat some college basketball with him. Lots of talking points there with that. So we're looking forward to that segment with Ralph on today's show. So without further ado, we'll bring in today's first guest. That is Mr. Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. Brad, what's a good word, man? How are you today?
I'm excellent on this fine Thursday morning. Good to hear your voice here, Adam. Hope all is well back east.
Yeah, everything going well. It's pretty damn cold, but it is what it is. It's kind of what you expect here in the month of January. Let's go ahead and start with this FCS game because I haven't touched on it with any of our other handicappers. In fact, truthfully, I didn't even realize it was coming up here on Saturday. I probably should have thought of that given the playoff format. But Youngstown State and James Madison. James Madison, a 7.5-point favorite this game to be played in Frisco, Texas. So definitely a neutral site for both of these teams. One in Youngstown, James Madison out there in Virginia. So, you know, when you look at this matchup here, I mean, obviously Bo Pelini, the head coach at Youngstown State, the thing that really stands out. But if you feel like this is a pretty good line here?
I think it's sharper than most FCS lines, to be honest with you. I think there's a tremendous amount of value. Don't want to toot my own horn, but, you know, I'm selective with FCS. But as far as top plays, perfect for the season, 8-0, and that counts, obviously, FBS versus FCS and a couple of FCS playoff games. And that's basically whenever I think the line – for an FCS game, for me to come out with a play, I mean, sometimes it's got to be about a touchdown off. My power ratings where college football can be, you know, three off and I can, you know, fire on a play. But, yeah, I think this one's definitely sharper. I still think, though, depending on what the suspension is going to be handed down for James Madison, I still think it's about a point and a half off. But, I mean, let's talk James Madison to begin with here. A very impressive team. Their only loss this season came against North Carolina when it lost 56-28. No shame in that one. I mean, it's been as impressive as you could be as far as the playoff run. So they clearly deserve to be in the favorite role. I mean, it's a team that was laying around two touchdowns in New Hampshire, crushed them 55-22. Sam Houston State was arguably maybe the best performance of any FCS team this year. Sam Houston State's been a perennial playoff team in the FCS level, been to multiple FCS championship games, just ran into North Dakota State a few times. But then they win that game 65-7, James Madison, laying about a touchdown. And then, I mean, a lot of people watched it. They're about a touchdown underdog on the road against the five-time defending champ. And they control that game for much of it against North Dakota State, win by 10. So a very impressive-looking James Madison team. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what the suspensions are. On the flip side, I mean, Youngstown State, obviously, I mean, they wouldn't be sitting here in the championship game if they didn't have an impressive season. But you look at they have three losses, but they're all explainable. I mean, they lost on the road to West Virginia. They covered. I did have a Youngstown State ticket in that one. That one opened like 24.5. Got bet down tremendously. I do remember that one in week two. South Dakota State, they lost to. South Dakota State was a second round FCS playoff team. They lost at North Dakota State. Both of all three games on the road. They've had a longer road to hole here. They did not have a bye as far as the FCS playoffs went, but they have won their games. I did have and it wasn't easy. I did have a ticket on them against Wofford a few weeks back. I needed double overtime for that one. They were laying around 3 to 4 points, so I did get very fortunate in that one. And then, obviously, on the road at Eastern Washington, on the red turf, they get that incredible touchdown catch on the back of a player in the final seconds of that game. They were about a 2-touchdown underdog in that one. They win the game 40-38. Statistically, They're just, I mean, they're not going to wow you. I mean, because you look at James Madison, they've outgained their opponents 526 to 348. They've outscored their opponents by about, you know, 26 points per game. They're very balanced. They're one of the best offenses at the FCS level. They average 285 yards per game rushing, 241 yards per game passing. Flip side, you know, Youngstown State, just, I mean, when you look at some of their statistics, I mean, it's not overwhelming. It hurts them that they play in what I call the SEC of the FCS in their conference, where they're in the same conference as South Dakota State and North Dakota State and Northern Iowa and teams like that. But, you know, with a couple of big playoff wins, and you got Bo Pelini on the sidelines, who's got a lot of head coaching experience. Meanwhile, James Madison's got a first-year coach. Keep in mind, Everett Withers was their coach the last couple of years. He's now the Texas State head coach. I got a power rated about 6, so I'll see where the lines are. That's not enough for me to have a play, obviously, at the FCS level. But right now, north of a touchdown, give me a slight lean on Youngstown State plus the points.
Well, good to bring a little bit of FCS flavor here into this thing. And, you know, especially with a couple of programs that have had a lot of success. And, you know, with Bo Pelini and Jim Tressel doing some work there at Youngstown State. You and I were talking about that a little bit before we came on the air here, that really only took them 2 years as a tandem to put this team in the national championship game. And you certainly have to respect that. And I think that that's evident in the line here. But we've got one more FBS game to go for this college football season. Clemson and Alabama, rematch of last year's college football playoff national championship game. I'm kind of surprised here. I know you made mention of this on Twitter shortly before we started the show here today. Sevens are starting to pop again on Alabama. Now, it doesn't necessarily surprise me they're going back to seven, but it surprises me that it's happening here on Thursday. It's something I would have expected more over the weekend or on game day.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's why I tweeted it out. I didn't expect it. I was kind of surprised to see it show up. It's just a few places. Obviously, it's, you know, but obviously not hole-in-the-wall places in the Women's South Point, two very known Las Vegas sportsbooks here locally. But, yeah, I thought it was surprising. I expected it to be later in the week. Because all the early action's been on Clemson, and, you know, I would define it as both, you know, probably public and pro money on Clemson. At least the pros are on Clemson when the very early lines are starting to pop up in the third and fourth quarter of the Ohio State-Clemson game on Saturday night. All the action was on Clemson. All the action obviously also on the under in this game. But, yeah, we're starting to see, and I think maybe it's representative of everything you're hearing out of Tuscaloosa this week, is, you know, there maybe isn't that big of an adjustment going to Sarkisian. I beg to differ a little bit. I mean, keep in mind, Sarkisian was a guy that, you know, it's not like he was a quarterback's coach. He was a offensive quality control assistant. So he had limited contact per NCAA rules. So we'll put that in air quotations here. He was supposed to have limited contact with the players all year. So I do think it's an adjustment. And I did downgrade Alabama offensively, even though that was a pathetic putrid effort against Washington and a major reason why Lane Kiffin's not calling plays in this game. But, you know, Clemson is a rare instance where I actually upgraded a team 3 points this late in the season. I mean, that was Urban Meyer and Ohio State, what they did that to. That there was without a shadow of a doubt, they were by far the better team. Been waiting to see that performance from Clemson all season long. They've showed, you know, splashes of it in a quarter or two, but not a full 60-minute effort on both sides of the football. So, you know, rematch, obviously, that's going to get the headlines here. I think it's a matchup a lot of almost everyone wanted to see except Adam Burke. He was really cheering for his beloved Buckeyes. And next year, Adam, for that one, they'll be better prepared next year. You know, looking at the current, you know, consensus lines, it's tough for me to take too much of a stance here. 6.5. I mean, you're wanting to bet Clemson. I mean, I'd probably wait it out and, you know, or shop around. I mean, obviously you want 7, 7.5 in that regard. I don't know if you're going to get 7.5, but you might be able to get 7. I'd wait. Alabama, if you want to lay 6.5, boy, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's a little more, obviously it's more tempting than laying 7, but, you know, I'll probably be in the position that I take. I took early position on Clemson, both when it was above 7 points at 7.5. I also took a flyer on Clemson plus 225 on the money line. That I did. I might come back depending on what Alabama's money line is going to be and position myself. But, I mean, let's be honest, people. I know it's a national title game. Everybody wants action on it. But compared to my power ratings, the line's pretty much right now where it should be. I might have Alabama 6, and we got a line of 6.5. So we're definitely – for all those fly-by-night services that, that put their games of the year out on the title games, or at least big plays on the title game, that will not be BP. That will not be BP Sports. I'll just have some very slight lanes and very slight action in pocket on this one.
Yeah, and that's what makes it so tough, and we've talked about that before here in this industry, is that when you get these monumental games, people want action. But this is, at least it should be, the sharpest single line of the season, both on the side and the total, because you have an entire body of work for these teams. Oddsmakers know, you know, what the betting trends are going to be in terms of who's on what side, where sharps are coming in, where the public's going to come in, you know, and it's a standalone game. They don't have to worry about 40, 50, 60 games on a Saturday. They're only looking at one game here on a Monday. So that certainly makes it challenging for the position that you're in, you know, as both a professional handicapper, knowing that, you know, this is a very sharp line, and also somebody that has customers that wants action on this game. But I sort of feel like, much like last year's game, the best approach for this game is probably to live bet it.
No question about it. And, you know, unfortunately, that's not an option for the majority of the people. But, I mean, if you can do it, I mean, that's the way to do it. I mean, I was doing it, you know, sometimes I can't live in-game bet as much as I want to, just because I'm always handicapping. You know, there's always games being played the next day, and I don't get a chance because I am running a business here. You know, I'd like to be more on the professional better side of things than actually running the service type of things. But, you know, the Rose Bowl and stuff like that on Monday, we're able to get it. And, you know, I can honestly say I had a Penn State plus 16.5 ticket when USC went up 13-0. I was sitting there and I was like, wow, 16.5. I mean, USC actually kind of blew a couple of scoring chances to really put this game on ice. At least they should be up more. And Penn State's the best second half team in all of college football. So, yeah, I would say depending on how the game goes, you're going to get a feel for it early. In fact, I mean, my best guess is the teams are going to feel each other out early. I mean, I don't expect to see too many points early. And you know, kind of disregard, I mean, 45-40 last year, everyone's talking high scoring in that, but I don't know if people remember it accordingly. 40 of those 85 points were in the fourth quarter. That wasn't a high-flying game. It was, you know, trending towards the over, but maybe trending towards the over by about a touchdown, not necessarily cashing the over by 35 points last year. So be a little wary here, and I do think Alabama's defense is better positioned to stop Deshaun Watson this year. They're a little more aggressive. I think they're better athletically, speed sideline to sideline compared to what they were, and I think Clemson's defense is better. Keep in mind, Clemson had a couple of defensive injuries that were critical in that game. Obviously, with Alabama playing with a freshman quarterback and a first-time play caller, don't be looking at the 45-40 and expecting anything close to that. In fact, I think the under would be the lean more than anything in the game, even though at this current 51 total, you're not getting the best number in the market.
Well, before we get away from college football here for this season, believe me, we'll talk more about college football as we go through the college basketball season as well, because I know that's Brad's bread and butter, and it's you know, his favorite sport and the one that certainly his customers looked at him for. But I've been doing this with all the handicappers that I've had on the show here, and of course I want to ask you as well, sort of like a New Year's resolutions type of thing, looking at your year in review, looking at what worked for you, what didn't, what you'll try to incorporate a little bit more heading into next season. I think that's the point that I want to start at here is, you know, everything is constantly changing here in the college football marketplace and really in the sports betting industry as a whole. So where do you feel you maybe fell a little bit short this year, something that maybe you should have accounted for more that you didn't, or maybe something you added kind of mid-season where you realized, you know what, I'm kind of costing myself by not doing, you know, X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, I would say I lost some – there's some missed opportunities with me in the totals market. Totals, the college football totals specialty of mine. I had multiple, you know, big seasons in a row when I was working with North Coast Sports back in the day with a gentleman that you're going to have on later in the show, Ralph Michaels from California Sports. And then last year, you know, I didn't for some particular reason, I didn't have that great of a totals year in college football overall. And, I adjusted some things in the off season. You know, it probably was a little more gun shy than what I should have been because I was right back at it as far as having a good college totals season. But I probably didn't fire enough strongly enough and enough of the plays in the college totals action. So that's probably a regret that I have. You know, I just think from a personal aspect, I moved to the Vegas area in the July. And I, you know, I'm very candid with my approach and with my customers and what, where I feel like I fall short, whether it be professionally or personally. I think that put me behind the eight ball a little bit. There were some adjustments for me. I got to be honest with you, Adam. The biggest adjustment for me was time difference this year moving out here. I'm an early morning guy. That's where I usually get my advantage back east. I was waking up 4:35 o'clock in the morning and getting a jump start to the day. I'm not a night owl. Well, you know, waking up at 4:35 o'clock here means it's already 7:30 and 8 o'clock on the East Coast. And let's be honest, it's an East Coast business. Games are kicking off at noon on college Saturday. And it's not like I'm prepped for those games. Obviously I got to do that, but I found myself, you know, having to release, you know, on Fridays and stuff like that. And there was a little bit of, you know, cut time as far as, you know, the preparations went, you know, 3 hours behind. And that probably cost me. I'm going to have to better position myself next year and to adjust for that. That to me was probably my biggest struggle this year. And that's not necessarily a professional level. That's a personal level, adjusting to being on West Coast time. And I felt like I was losing 3 hours every week.
This is something I think we talked about in the middle of the season when you were struggling a little bit. I think you had a 2 or 3 week period where things were pretty down, and we sort of talked about this, and I want to revisit this topic then, because I imagine that there are some of our listeners out there that have thought about or dreamt about moving out there to Las Vegas. Do you feel like it helped you to be around other handicappers to get those other sorts of opinions, or was it more of a detriment to you because you started maybe second guessing yourself a little bit, especially if you were struggling?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's probably a little bit of both. I don't regret moving out here, the connections that I made out here. It's made me, I don't know if necessarily the handicapping side as far as the college football knowledge, that's always been there. And I you know, with all due respect to everyone out there, I mean, but they're also bouncing much better than I do from sport to sport. But the college football knowledge side of things, I think it's tough for a lot of people to hold up. But where I did learn a lot by coming out here is the actual betting side of things, you know, how valuable half points and, you know, money line moves and where to position yourself and where the markets are going to go. I thought I was much better in that, predicting on where the lines are going to move. And I think that's critical in this industry. But you're exactly right. You know, guys, I mean, look, you're going to respect. I haven't been in the industry for 20, 30 years like some of the guys out here. And when you hear guys talk that have been here, and it's a very tough industry to last 20 or 30 years in. So, you know, I fully respect them and always will respect those guys that have been there, done that, and have come before me. But you're exactly right. I sometimes maybe put a little bit too much faith in what they were saying and, you know, second question myself. And maybe I won't do so much, but I still absolutely no regrets moving out here. It was just an adjustment that, you know, probably was a little overwhelming, and I probably took on a little too much myself doing some more radio and TV this year than probably what I should have. So I thought it was not necessarily the handicapping wasn't there this year. I just thought there was a lot of moving parts outside of that kind of hurt me. I finally adjusted at the end of the season. I mean, prior to January 2nd, I last six day, we had a forget 2 or 3 weeks from October to about, you know, the second week in November. I mean, it was maybe one winning week out of 6 weeks. So it was not a good look for me at all. But then again, it's a marathon, not a sprint. And it turned right around, you know, out of the last 6 or 7 weeks, I maybe had one losing week. So, I mean, that's another key thing that I want to drive home. The reason the books have had 40 consecutive months of they have shown a profit, the sports books here in Vegas, is because a lot of times that happens. Maybe you start off hot early, you increase your bets because you got a bigger bankroll, and then you go through that law where you have multiple losing weeks. And then, you know, a lot of Joe Public bettors, you know, give up at that point. And that's where, you know, obviously Vegas wins. But if you stay true to your discipline, you stay true to your number of picks, the size of your wagers, and don't give up too easily, in the longer run, you can show some profits. And, you know, even though I had a struggle in October and early November, the, you know, end of the season came out ahead. And I think with everything that went on with me personally and professionally with the move out here, you know, I can't complain too much, to be honest with you, Adam.
Well, then we'll finish with a glass half full approach. Sounds like you kind of did that a little bit anyway. But in terms of adjustments you made from 2015 to 2016 that worked for you, that you're going to continue into 2017 and maybe even incorporate a little bit more, what would some of those things be?
Yeah, I'll say this. I mean, you know, and my customers will probably admit, you know, I do, and I already kind of touched on it. You know, coming out here, and having the connections that I do, and I'm very, very fortunate to have those connections because, you know, of guys that, like the gentleman you're going to have on later talking college hoops, you know, I was brought in. I mean, sometimes it takes a handicapper years to get all the connections, but, you know, I was lucky enough the first year out here I had those. And, you know, I understand line moves a lot more. I can predict line moves a lot better than what I used to. So I think that's a positive moving forward. And, you know, also another positive probably moving forward and something I did first time ever. I mean, I've always had my power ratings, but I didn't, you know, focus in on them because I was doing some extra work and they want, you know, I had to publish my power ratings on a weekly basis for the entire world to see. And we can call into question, maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't do that. But, you know, I really worked on them religiously. I mean, I've always worked on them, but not with a fine tooth comb like I did this year. And that went for not only your Alabamas, but your South Alabamas of the world. And actually, if you just went off my just pure based power rating numbers, anything off of 3 compared to the Vegas line, and for the season, they hit like 57.5%. So I was actually surprised. It was something new that I was doing. I was putting out a projected just power rating line on each and every game and publishing it for the whole world to see. And I got to be honest with you, I was relatively surprised that it actually performed better than my own personal handicapping. If I fired every time that the power ratings was off 3 points off the Vegas line, I probably would have had an outstanding season and there wouldn't have been that lull that I had in October and November.
Last thing here for college football, and then we'll flip over to the NFL playoffs, at least for this week. I had a question from one of our listeners here asking when you start handicapping college football futures. And this is something that you and I kind of touched on a little bit. This was while you were still in town. You and I went out and had a few beers and talked about this. But the timeline keeps accelerating for college football. Chris Andrews over at South Point is going to have numbers up even earlier in 2017 than he did in 2016. So you have to be ready a lot earlier in the calendar year than you've had to in previous years. So when do you start looking at that whole process?
I'm starting right now. They were laughing at me. I was telling some people, like, hey, you know, what are you doing with college hoops and stuff like that? And I told them, yeah, I'm working on my college basketball power ratings and stuff. But I got to be honest with you, I was also spending some time on my college football recruiting rankings, seeing, you know, where teams are and who they have bringing in. Because obviously a lot of people are declaring early for the draft. That's probably step one for me. Who's declaring early? Who's gone? You start looking at returning experience. And again, everyone, the market's going to look at quarterback, running back, wide receiver. I'm going to look at the line of scrimmage. That involves a lot more work, obviously, because you're dealing with 5 positions and not 5 well-known positions there. So I've started right now working on it. I mean, you have to because, you know, Chris Andrews just last year, definitely tip of the cap to him. I mean, he moved this whole process up 6 weeks. And not only did he move the process up 6 weeks, but he expanded the process. I mean, kudos to Tony Miller and the Golden Nugget for years have done the college game of the year lines and stuff like that in July. But, you know, and win totals come out for your 25 or 30 teams, obviously, around July. No, Chris Andrews, what he does is he not only comes out with college game of the year lines at the end of May, but then he also puts a season win total on all 128 teams. Not a single place, at least locally in Las Vegas, there's been some offshore places that have done it, but no one's really ever done that before, and he did it 6 weeks before anyone had ever done it. So, no, I will be constantly, you know, and maybe not – obviously not full-time because I'm going to be doing some, you know, basketball handicapping, but there will be part-time work on college football for me starting right now. That's never going to end for me. We have recruiting. We have the early draft entries. And believe it or not, I mean, there's a couple schools that will start spring practice in mid to late February. So there really isn't an off season. And if he's going to come out with all those numbers sometime in May, it's going to be me against him. And with all due respect to Chris Andrews, who does a phenomenal job, he's worrying about several other sports where if I really focus in, it's going to be me against him head to head. And if I put in more man hours than him, I'd like to think that I can come out ahead and beat him because, I mean, let's face it. When it comes to the college football regular season, it's you, the handicapper, against all the other handicappers in the world, the entire public betting markets, the sharps, everyone. It's you against the world where when he opens up these lines in May, I mean, for the most part, it's you, it's me against Chris Andrews. And I like my odds, me versus Chris Andrews, than me against the entire world. So, yeah, I'm going to never take the eye off the prize. To me, I'd rather be one of the best in the world at one sport than merely above average in multiple sports. So I will continue to work on college football year-round, Adam.
Well, we'll touch on the other part of that question here about what goes into the process in the coming weeks when we still have Brad on. We'll talk a little bit of college football or college basketball and the NFL and some of the segments that we have coming up here in later weeks. But you know, I want to go over to the NFL side here, and we've got four playoff games here this weekend, the wild card weekend, beginning with Oakland and Houston on Saturday. And this is a game that probably becomes a little bit more of a challenging handicap because you've got Brock Osweiler, who has not played well for the Texans, going up against an Oakland defense that isn't very good. You got Connor Cook on the other side making the start for Oakland against a Houston defense that has been pretty good. And yet this number got to 3.5. It's basically sat there. A couple of books have popped fours now. Not really as much movement as I would have expected to see.
Nah, well, it's going to be tough. 36.5, I mean, that's the lowest total. If it stays at 36.5, that'll be the lowest total in any NFL game. You got to go back to 2012. That's playoffs and regular season. It's tough to take a position there too much. 37 is a key number, 2017. I mean, that's a pretty key number when it comes to totals. So, you know, I'm hoping the public will bet that up. An extra half point. Otherwise, I mean, it's awfully tough. You're definitely not going to get an overcall for me when you're dealing, in my opinion, maybe the worst quarterback matchup in the history of the NFL as far as the playoffs. I mean, Connor Cook's going to be the first quarterback ever to make his first career start in the NFL playoff game. Obviously got Osweiler, who was benched just, you know, 3 games ago, 15 touchdowns, 16 interceptions for the season. And, yeah, I got to wonder the mental state of Houston, because you sensed it from the crowd when Tom Savage came into that game against Jacksonville. It was kind of an uplift for everyone in the entire stadium, whether it be players, coaches, or fans. Obviously, Savage didn't perform that good in the preceding couple of games. So I don't know if it's a downgraded quarterback going back to Osweiler. I think a lot of people here locally upgraded Houston because of that emotional factor. The reality was it wasn't much of an upgrade for Savage. So I really didn't do much to Houston's power rating with them going back to Osweiler. I did downgrade. Obviously, Oakland got downgraded significantly going from Derek Carr to Matt McGloin. Probably I downgrade him another point with Connor Cook making his first start. Connor Cook looked all right. I think he's more talented, obviously, than Matthew McGloin. And keep in mind, Connor Cook's a quarterback that, you know, prior to some leadership issues off the field and getting called into question as far as why he was never a captain at Michigan State, he also had some shoulder issues late in the season. A lot of people had him graded as a first-round talent, at least heading into his senior season. So he is a talented quarterback, but he is going up against a defense of Houston. They're number one in the NFL in total defense. Are they the number one defense? No, but they're a very good defense. I mean, they're top 10, obviously. I'd rank them probably in the 5 to 10 range in the NFL. That's a tough defense. And, you know, you look at Bill O'Brien, one thing he does do, and he's not, I would say he's a little bit above average coach. He takes care of business when he's a favorite. He's 18-2 straight up, 14-5-1 against the spread. 3.5 is not a great number to lay in a very low scoring game. I can tell you I probably won't come out of pocket too heavily in this one. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, leans for me are going to be on the under. And also on Houston minus the points.
We'll go to the first of two NFC wildcard playoff games here this weekend. This one, the late Saturday kick in primetime between Detroit and Seattle. We've seen a 9 pop out there in the offshore marketplace, that coming from the Greek. But most of the market sitting here at 8, with Seattle laying a pretty big number at home. I know that in a general sense, you try to look for reasons to take the dogs, and you'd certainly look to go that route on the NFL playoffs, I would imagine. But can you really take an injured Matthew Stafford here going all the way out to Seattle?
No, I can't. And, boy, it makes this week on the whole, Adam, I'm going to tell you, I'm frustrated with this year's playoffs, at least the wild card round. You want to come out of pocket because you know your customer base is going to want a lot of strong stuff. And I got to be honest with you, I am not very strong in any of the four games. So, I mean, it's going to sound like a broken record here. But, yeah, I would love – there's a lot of – I mean, I'm normally a dog guy. And, you know, you go back historically, I mean, the dogs decide to go here in the last 10 years, at least of the wild card round. There was a couple of bad years that they had, but they came back with a force last year. But there's a lot of ugly dogs here that I just can't talk myself into tickets. Detroit's one of them. I mean, you just look at them. I mean, talk about playoff history. I mean – they're on an 0-8 run in the playoffs, and they're 1-6-1 against the spread, and they're going up against Seattle team that's been money, at least at home. You know, they won their last 9 home games by an average of 10 points per game. Now, I will say Seattle, there's been point spread inflation with them, and they failed to cover the last 4 playoff games against the spread. I'm a little worried because Seattle lost their last home game outright to Arizona. It wasn't a good look. Keep in mind, they were pretty dominant at home this year, 7-0. Prior to that, they were outscoring their opponents by more than 13 points per game. I don't like the situation for Detroit. I mean, let's just break down their schedule. It's a team that had to play on the road at Monday night at Dallas after Christmas, after everyone else was playing on Christmas Eve for the most part. Then they have to play a Sunday night football game with the division on the line against Green Bay. Then they have a short travel week all the way across the country against the Seattle team that obviously hasn't had a good look the last couple of weeks, should be very motivated, got a little bit healthier. I am worried that the fact that Lockett's out on offense, and then obviously their defense hasn't been the same without safety Earl Thomas the last 4 games. But, yeah, I would lean Seattle -8. I'd probably say, hey, I don't expect it to come down. Shop around. I see a rogue 7.5 or 2 out there, so maybe shop around a little bit. But definitely for me, I'm leaning with Seattle -8 because I hate the situation for Detroit. I'm talking myself into the over, believe it or not, a little bit. Seattle's defense allowing 8 points more per game with safety Thomas out of the lineup the last 4 weeks. That includes, I mean, keep in mind what's helping their stats out even in that regard. They played Los Angeles and gave up 3 points. That was L.A. on a short travel week with Jared Goff and an interim coach. So I don't think Seattle's defense is good. I do think Matthew Stafford's finger's getting better. I at least like this performance last week where he threw for over 300 yards. Obviously, the last touchdown helped the stats out a little bit and didn't help the books out, helped the public with the game going over. Over for me in Seattle minus the points, but just like the Oakland-Houston game, we're not talking tremendous bets for me out of pocket.
We'll move to Sunday here, Miami and Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, double-digit favorite here in this one. Miami's got all kinds of injury problems, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Could be missing both of their starting safeties here. Not really a good look when you're taking on Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, and Ben Roethlisberger, is it?
No, it isn't. And double-digit point spread. You know, sharp guys usually like taking big dogs, but it hasn't worked out. You know, last 5 times, there's been a double-digit favorite in the NFL playoffs. The favorites covered all 5 times. So, and the difference between laying double digits in the regular season and the postseason is so stark. I mean, because you know you're getting maximum effort in the postseason from that favorite. And obviously, there's a legitimate reason why they're going to be a double-digit favorite in the postseason, because it's awfully tough to do that when you're dealing with playoff teams. But it's fully warranted here. I mean, keep in mind, I mean, the Dolphins did outright upset Pittsburgh early in the season, but that was a game Roethlisberger got hurt in. It started this run for Miami, and kudos to them. They far exceeded expectations. I don't think anyone had them winning 10 games this year. They go on that 9-1 straight up run, 8-2 against the spread until they lost to the Patriots in the finale. But I think a lot of it was bad scheduling. I mean, outside of the Pittsburgh game, which started it, they played Buffalo, the Jets, San Diego, L.A., San Francisco. They got crushed by Baltimore, played Arizona, who was very disappointing, played the Jets and Buffalo again. Very misleading. And keep in mind, their last 6 games, they went 4-2 straight up. And even playing a relatively weak schedule in that stretch, they were getting outgamed by nearly 100 yards per game. Pittsburgh's the hottest team coming in, 7 straight wins. Throw out the Cleveland game because they're resting everyone. They were plus 117 yards per game in that win streak. The rushing game really got going, obviously, when they got Bell back from suspension. Last 7 games, they averaged 135 rushing yards per game. I think it's critical that Bell got a rest last week. They're facing the number 30 rush defense in the NFL in Miami that allow a league-high 4.8 yards per carry. You add all this up, I'm laying it, I'm playing it. I'm probably a little stronger on this one. Give me Pittsburgh minus the 10. They blow out the Dolphins.
Well, the most compelling game of the weekend from both a betting standpoint and a watchability standpoint should be this one between the New York Giants and the Green Bay Packers. Packers 4.5-point favorites. You already know Green Bay in January, it's going to be cold. So weather could play a little bit of a role here in this one. But I think this is an intriguing line. Number open 3.5 at Bookmaker, now up to 4.5. How do you break this game down?
Yeah, I mean, it's intriguing because, boy, there was some very early line movement offshore markets that a lot of people didn't get a hold of. But actually, Green Bay opened 7.5 That was in the second half of the Detroit-Green Bay game. I don't think they were realizing that Green Bay had some cluster injuries at the cornerback spot, but the Sharps got a hold of that one, and within 10 minutes it went from 7.5 down to 4.5. So that was just a bad line move by a couple of the offshore books that got a little ahead of themselves in the second half of the Detroit-Green Bay game. I think it's an extremely tough handicap, and I think it's more of a high-variance game. I would not be stunned if you look at Eli Manning and the Giants' playoff history. Very strong, 8-1 straight up, 8-1 against the spread. Remarkable 7-0 against the spread as an underdog. I mean, they have beaten Green Bay outright in each of their last two trips there to Lambeau Field in the playoffs. Would not be stunned if the Giants won the game outright. Also wouldn't be stunned if, you know, Green Bay just continued their dominating performance and won the game by double digits. I mean, you look at Rodgers' last seven games, 18 touchdowns, zero interceptions. The Giants finished on a solid 9-2 straight up, 8-3 against the spread run last 11 games. They had a surprising upset over Washington, in my opinion, last week when they didn't have too much to play for, when they were really locked into the 5 seed. Defensively, I mean, defensive dogs and Eli Manning with a chip on his shoulder usually is profitable, but I don't know if I can trust Ben McAdoo, because the difference between the Giants in 07 and 2011 when they made these Super Bowl runs is they had a ground game. They had the defense, although this defense, I think, is better on the back end than what the defenses for the Giants in 07 and 11 were kind of, you know, built upon their defensive line. This one, I think that their entire defense is pretty good, but I think their secondary is their best unit on that. So they're built a little bit differently. I'm worried that they don't have Tom Coughlin. I think Tom Coughlin's a much better coach than Ben McAdoo, even though McAdoo's really gotten more out of the Giants this year than what Coughlin did the last couple of years when he was there. And I also worry that the Giants don't have a running game. I mean, they're averaging 88 yards per game in the season. And Green Bay's defense, I know the back end's dealing with some injuries, but, you know, the front seven's played better down the stretch. Oh, my goodness. I mean, this is like picking between children. I actually, when it's all said and done, might have an over ticket. Everyone's betting on the total because it's going to be really cold. I don't think the cold affects the Giants in Green Bay like it does other teams. It looks like there's not going to be too much wind. That's the major factor for me. No snow, no wind. It's a heated field, actually, a heated surface for Green Bay. I'll probably be on the over when it's all said and done this one.
Well, lots of brilliant analysis today from Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. Brad, what's going on over at the website right now?
Yeah, you can still purchase. We got 3-4 more issues left of this season. If you want to take advantage of that, you can go at BradPowersSports.com, check out the newsletter. 55% winners this year. 55% is not too bad. You can show a profit there. Obviously, I want it to be better, and it was the first season, but not too shabby there. We had a really significant run prior to January 2nd as far as the bowl action. Ended up showing a profit there in the bowls. You can check it out for the rest of the season, or you can pre-order for next season. If you want 28 issues at the lowest price, you'll see $79 for the Powers Picks newsletter. Very happy and one of the best newsletters out there, not only this year, but last year as far as winning percentage and where we took home the newsletter title. $79 for pre-ordering for 2017 and 18. We talked about it on the show, and I'll have a lot of early college football thoughts coming up in those issues in February and March. Check it out, BradPowersSports.com. You can follow me on Twitter at BradPowers, the number 7.
Well, Brad, it's always a joy, man. Thank you so much for joining me, and I'll talk to you again next week, buddy.
All right, sounds good. Take care, my friend.
Great stuff there from Brad Powers, BradPowersSports.com. If you want to play any of these NFL playoff games, any of the stuff that he tips for his college football futures, whatever the case may be, head on over to DSI Sportsbook. Our Bang the Book radio listeners can use the promo code BTBRadio. That'll get you a $10 free bet just for signing up, and then you get an additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. So it's a good opportunity to head on over there to DSI, start building up a bankroll, and then have that as one of your outlets for shopping around. One more segment to go on today's show that is with Ralph Michaels of WagerTalk.com. Ralph, how's it going today, my friend?
Great, Adam. How are you? Happy New Year to everyone.
Happy New Year to you as well. I'm doing well. It's a whiteout outside, so that kind of sucks, but, you know, it is what it is. I guess it's that time of year. But we got a lot of stuff to get to here on this segment today, and hopefully we can fit it all in. I know that you called a few minutes early. I apologize for having you on hold there. But the first thing I want to discuss, the same thing I talked about with Brad and I've talked about with other professional handicappers here throughout the week, New Year's resolution, some stuff that maybe – worked for you in 2016 that you want to incorporate for 2017, maybe some stuff that didn't work for you. As you look at your year in review, what are some of the big takeaways for you?
Well, I can tell you that it's good riddance 2016 for me. I opened up 2016 with a bowl play of the year on Oregon, which blew a 33-0 halftime lead. And then I closed 2016 with a bowl play of the year on Arkansas, which blew a 24-0 lead. So my resolution is, if I have a bowl game of the year, it's going to be a first half play for next year.
Or at least play back on it in the second half just to cover yourself and tell your clients to do the same thing. You know, one of the things I talked about with Brad there in that last segment, and you know this, you've been in this market for a long time, everything is constantly adapting. So you keep having to do different things to keep up with the market. Is there anything in the forecast for 2017 that you see that, you know, maybe you do want to focus a little bit more on?
You know, and we talked about that as well. And, you know, we talked about the changes, and there is no bigger change in any sport, I don't believe, than when you go from non-conference to conference basketball. You know, I start looking at value at some of the inline games, and while it takes more work, there truly is great value in playing an inline game. You know, if you have the favorite and your dog scores on a fluky touchdown, you know, you're basically getting the same play you just had minus, you know, 4 or 5 points that they're giving back to you. So, you know, it's more work. It's something you can't force plays on. And just to jump back to a New Year's resolution, and I read this to myself almost every day when I'm handicapping, I always say to myself, it is better to leave a loser off than it's better to leave a winner off your card than add a loser. We're paying the 10% when we play. Don't force plays. Be selective and make sure you're understanding the opposite side of your game. When you're handicapping yourself, you're looking at a game, you're looking at all the positives. I always write down the negatives. There's plenty of negatives on a reason why not to play a game. Make sure your side is stronger than the reason not to play it.
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting point because I've talked with other professional handicappers about that before, and I've always said, you know, one of the things that I look to do when I like a game is I do try to make a case against it because I feel like if I'm only looking at one thing, if I'm only locked in on I like this side, I'm playing this side, that's what I'm doing, you know, you're doing yourself a major disservice because you're putting your own personal bias into that to the point where it's blinding you to something you may miss. So I do think that's an excellent point. And, you know, some of the other people I've talked to in the past have been like, well, why the hell would you do that? Why would you try to build a case against yourself? But I need that perspective. I want that perspective.
Well, you know, I tell my customers, you know, especially when you get to in college football, the midweek games and things like that, you know, what's the difference between a play and opinion? What caused you to make that a play, or what caused you to make that play and downgrade it to opinion? There's obviously, there's both sides. And I actually go through, you know, sometimes a mental checklist and sometimes I write down the checklist on, you know, why to play a game or why not to play this team. And it's important to weigh those and make sure you have the right edges.
Well, before we dive into the talking points that we want to go over here for some games that have recently been played and then also some games that are coming up here this weekend, I know I got an email from you yesterday, I believe it was. You're sending out a new college basketball guide every week. Why don't you tell our listeners what that's all about and where they can get it?
You know what? It's going to be free. It's going to be a weekly guide. It's up at wagertalk.com right now. It should be on the front page, or you could just go to the Cal Sports page. But it's simply something I used to do for myself. Since 90%+ of all the games now are conference games, I have the conference standings, both straight up and conference records, scoring the scoring difference, and then we get into some of my numbers. I give you my exclusive power ratings, my offense and defense adjusted numbers and how they are compared to the competition, the strength of schedule, and then we go into 15 different ATS and straight up categories. I have line category, home, road, favorite, and dog. And I already have gotten some tweets and some emails asking me, well, why do you put a straight-up line record, or why do you care what their straight-up record is as a dog? Now, people always look at ATS records, but, you know, let me give you an example. Auburn this year. Auburn prior to last night was 4-0 as a dog against the spread, but they were also 4-0 straight up. So it's a team where if you have a short line and you're perhaps thinking about taking advantage of a money line situation, it's a team you might want to look at. On the flip side, there are some road teams that are perhaps 6-1 ATS, but are only 1-5 straight up. Now that we get in the conference play, you have to be careful. If that team's a short road favorite, you know how they performed on the road. Look at that straight-up record as well. I think we tend, when we're gambling, to look at the ATS numbers, but there's value in the straight-up numbers as well, and sometimes even more value than the ATS number.
Well, and for conference play here, I mean, it has been a very interesting week already, and it's only Thursday, and we've got a loaded card coming up on Thursday night, and then also this weekend. But we've seen already some significant upsets, particularly from home teams. Texas Tech knocking off West Virginia, that was certainly a big one. Had one last night with Butler beating Villanova. There have been a few of them here over the last few weeks. Notre Dame wound up being a favorite. They opened a dog to Louisville, so that's not an upset based on the closing number. Pitt had a nice upset victory over Virginia in overtime. So are you surprised at all to see this in the first week of conference play?
Well, you know, the funny thing is all four of those games that you called an upset, I'm going to call that almost ESPN speak, because Vegas did adjust accordingly. And I think all of those games are were within a basket either way. So, you know, while they weren't upset because Texas Tech wasn't ranked and West Virginia was number 7, you know, the line was only 2, showing that the home court edge is so important in college basketball. Again, Butler at home, one of the strongest home courts, beats Villanova. Is that a surprise? Not really. Notre Dame at home against Louisville. I think the upsets come more a true upset is when it's on the road in conference play, especially later on. But all those teams you mentioned that pull those upsets were at home, either as the very short dog or the very short favorite.
Now, Texas Tech is a team that we'll touch on specifically here as we break down some games coming up this weekend. But as far as the overall landscape goes, you know, with some of these short upsets, I mean, look, Notre Dame is a very good team. And of course, that game didn't wind up being an upset, as I said, because of the closing line. But you would expect a team like Notre Dame that's had some wins like this to know how to handle its business after coming off of a victory like that. Probably the same thing with a Butler type of team. But when you get that upset, you know, let's take a team like Villanova, for example. I mean, the reigning national champions, only 58 points in that game against Butler. I think the immediate inclination from people is Villanova is going to bounce back. I'm going to play on them the next game. How do you sort of, you know, sort through all the muck, so to speak, to find out, you know, what you want your position to be?
You know, I certainly am under that belief. I will look to play a quality team off a loss. Number one, you have to make sure the situation is right. And number two, you have to remember that Vegas is thinking the same thing. So you have to have your power rating or your number in place. Don't just automatically play it. Play it only if the number you have in your mind pops up. So, you know, people tend to get in the situation of thinking, oh my gosh, they're off their first loss. They were 20-0. They lost the game. I'm going to play them off a loss. Well, in reality, they should have only been a 12-point favorite, and now they're laying 13, 13.5, or 14 because Vegas adjusted the number because they're off a loss. So have those thoughts in your head. Mark those notes for the future when they're playing in the next game, but make sure you also have your line in place. And again, a great way to start is take a look where my power ratings. You always want to use a few sets of power ratings to get your numbers, but at a glance, you know, you're going to see Villanova this week off the loss. They're going to play number 1 Marquette. My power rating has them at about a 10-point favorite plus your home edge. So if you're laying over that 12 or 13, start to be cautious.
Well, one of the games that kind of sticks out a little bit, and this isn't one that we're going to go too in-depth on, but I wrote a preview of it today at bangthebook.com, so it was one that I kind of took notice of, is Purdue. Purdue's on the road. They're a 3-point favorite against the Ohio State Buckeyes. Purdue coming off of its first conference loss with the overtime defeat to Minnesota at home. And Purdue was a 14-point favorite in that game. So, you know, in terms of looking at this one, you know, the thing that stood out to me right away was the number, because that's always the first thing that I look at. You know, Purdue, it would seem, is a much better team than Ohio State. Ohio State's been very inconsistent this year, but does it become a harder handicap when you have a team that loses at home as a double-digit favorite? You know, because you would think, hey, this isn't supposed to happen. There are bigger problems with this team. Or does it make it an easier handicap because you go, well, that was a one-off game for them. They should get back on track.
I tend to look at a team much more off a loss when they're off a home loss or off a bad home loss. You know, when you're battling on the road, as Villanova and Butler did, even though Villanova's the better team, it was an emotional, draining, back-and-forth game that takes something out of you. Purdue obviously did not have that effort. They lost that, and now they're going to a team that they should beat. They should be a favorite. You know, I'm going to go ahead and take a look at, you know, where my logs are right now. Purdue as a favorite, this is from the Cal Sports Wager Talk Guide. You know, Purdue as a favorite, 8-1 straight up. That'll now be 8-2, 6-4 ATS. But the one thing I look at is that Purdue has now faced a much tougher schedule than Ohio State. Ohio State has really played the sisters of the poor. Their strength of schedule is about 300, and that's even after a conference game. I like your situation as well. I'm going to guess that you projected Purdue. You know, in my head, you know, I probably have Purdue about a 4-point favorite. I don't know where you thought they were or what your projection was, but I'm interested to hear it.
Yeah, I was thinking somewhere in that 4-4.5 range, something more than a possession.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Ohio State has won their games at home again, but a very weak schedule. And I think Purdue is a team that I look for defensive teams. You know, offensive teams can have multiple bad games. Defensive teams rarely have multiple bad games.
Well, let's move here into the games that you wanted to touch on, the games that you sent over specifically. And all of a sudden, this game between Virginia Tech and Florida State on Saturday afternoon becomes very, very interesting because Florida State, coming off of a really emotional win on the road in Charlottesville against Virginia. Virginia Tech just got blasted by North Carolina State. They lost that game by 26 points on the road. Now they've got a back-to-back road game. They head down to Tallahassee. This is one that definitely fits that situational build that you like to handicap with.
It does. And, you know, I talked about this game not because I had a huge side on it, but I'm excited about both of these teams. You know, if you ask people about the ACC, you know, 9 out of 10 people, maybe 8 out of 10 or 7 out of 10 are going to say North Carolina and Duke. They forget about Louisville. They forget about Notre Dame. But, you know, this Florida State team, you know, was down a bit the last few years, but they are an amazing group of people. They have 13 players that average 9 minutes or more a game. Their top five all play 20 or more minutes, but they've got 8 other guys that play between 9 and 13 minutes. You know, Dwayne Bacon is a beast, and, you know, point guard XRM, Xavier Rathen-Meyer, you know, was a kid from Canada who wasn't recruited very well, but he played with Wigan. You know, and he's running that team. Florida State is a team that, with the good start they're having, I think they can potentially win the ACC. I have them that high. You know, and Virginia Tech is another team I have circled that I'm looking at. And, you know, Virginia Tech returned 5 backcourt players that averaged 20 minutes. Buzz Williams in his third year. Granted, they did get rocked last week, but that was often a historic upset for them. And that's one of those situations where, you know, while they pulled the upset, it was an unexpected upset against a foe they haven't beat as a huge dog. I expected a letdown in the situation. So while I don't really have a play on this game, I think our listeners need to pay attention to these two teams because I think for the next few years, they're going to be upper category ACC teams. And again, Florida State, my surprise team to win the ACC this year.
You know, I think when Buzz Williams left Marquette, a lot of people were kind of scratching their heads a little bit thinking, you know, why would you go to a middling Virginia Tech program and take on some of the Titans here in the ACC since, you know, they kind of absorbed some of the Big East with Notre Dame and Louisville and Pitt. And of course, Duke and North Carolina have always been there. And people were kind of wondering, you know, what the thought process was there for Buzz Williams, but he's done a phenomenal job there in Blacksburg.
He's made him relative real quick, and that's the exciting thing. And, you know, I asked that same question. You know, with Marquette, you could potentially win that conference every year if you recruited the right kids, but it's a lot easier to get kids to come to Blacksburg than it is to Marquette. So I've gone back and forth on that. I think it was a great hire for Virginia Tech. And there's times that coaches just have enough money and they're comfortable in a small rural Blacksburg setting, and perhaps that's what's best for him and his family. So we always don't know the and why, but that seems to be a marriage that's compatible for both sides.
Well, let's move over to the Big 12 here. We got a tip off 7:15 Eastern time between Texas Tech and Kansas. This one at Allen Fieldhouse in Lawrence. Texas Tech coming off of that huge upset win over West Virginia in overtime. Biggest win of Chris Beard's tenure at Texas Tech, obviously, since it's just his first year. Kansas, been there, done that. They do what they always do. And, of course, they've, for the most part, done what they've always done this season. They're 13-1. Just that early loss to Indiana, and we're finding out maybe that wasn't as good of a loss as it seemed at the time. But what is it about this game that sticks out for you?
You know what? I'm going to disagree a bit on Kansas. Kansas right now thinks that they are 0-12. They are playing Bill Self came out after the Kansas State game where they allowed 50.8%, and he called this the worst defensive team he's ever coached. They are not playing good defense. They are not focused on the defensive side. They are 1-7 ATS their last eight games. And while their offense is getting them wins, they're not playing well. So I am now looking, after he called out his players, after the players had a meeting after the Kansas State game, I am now finally looking to play on Kansas in this situation. I agree with you. Now, I was on West Virginia against Texas Tech. So I stepped in. I wanted to play against Texas Tech. Should I have waited till they gotten on the road? Perhaps. I got burned on that one, and that was a loss for me and my customers. So that's not going to scare me off to play against them again. Texas Tech, this should tell you how weak their schedule is. They are 12-1, and they are 1-1 as a dog. So, you know, you've played 11 games as a favorite. You're still not ranked. You've played nobody. You've only played one true road game. You lost that was, they played two road games. They're 1-1 straight up. They lost at Iowa State their last game. They're off the upset win. There were 14 ties. There were 21 lead changes. They played the best game they possibly could. They only had 13 turnovers, and that included an overtime against that West Virginia D. They played the best game they had. Kansas played one of the worst games against an in-state rival, barely survived, allowed 51%, allowed 40-something, high 40s, three-point shooting. I think Kansas now turns it around. And because of those situations, you know, I'm expecting this line to be about 10. When's the last time Kansas at home laid 10, 11 points to Texas Tech? So it's a situation I'm going to step in on Kansas, look for them to turn around their defensive presence in this game and pull out an easy win.
You know, and we talk about situational handicapping, and you mentioned it in terms of previous games, but what about all the coverage that Kansas is getting here for a win that people are basically slapping an asterisk on, because that kid very clearly traveled, and that's been a story that's been dominating, you know, ESPN as much as it possibly can, and it helps that a team like Kansas is a, you know, big ratings draw and a very well-known team. Is that anything you feel like, you know, gives them any sort of extra motivation, or is that just kind of, you know, media narratives doing what the media does?
You know what? I don't think it affects the top 20 teams in the country. Your Dukes, your Kentuckys, you know, you've been there, you've done that. You know, you get calls that work for you. You know, you get calls that work against you. You've been in these tournaments. You play in the postseason every year. Things happen. You know, so much gets made out of those plays that happen in the last second of the game. You know, if the same play happens in the first 2 minutes, no one's even talking about it. So, you know, I think that program is structured, has the hierarchy to just not let it phase them one way or the other, and they're just focused on this team and worried about how poorly they played in that win.
Well, I like the way that we're going to wrap up this segment here because, you know, last week we mentioned that you sort of went through the process that you go through in terms of selecting the games that go on your card. You talked about how you look at the situations, look at how both teams are playing, all that type of stuff. And we've got two different types of games that you're going to let our listeners in on here, beginning with your situational game of the week.
You know, now, while I'm going to give you a situational and a technical play each week coming up here as a segment, we'll see how it works out. Just because something is a great situation or a great technical aspect, you still have to have the other categories at least not be against you. So while we're focusing on the situation and then we'll focus on the technicals, again, don't let that be your determining factor on the play. I've looked at other situations where highlighting these technicals or situations, and let me get into the first. You know, while everyone knows the ACC and Big Ten in basketball, there's as much value and even more value in some of these smaller conferences, and I'm going to go to the Horizon. And, you know, this is a team you know well. It's Cleveland State at Northern Kentucky. You know, Cleveland State upset Northern Kentucky twice last year. They were at home in like a pick 'em, but I consider that an upset game. If you're a home and not a favorite, the road team's a better team. And Cleveland State beat Northern Kentucky both times. Cleveland State and the Horizon League are going to play Thursday night. They go and play Wright State. Then they go to Northern Kentucky Saturday and play a 1 p.m. game. That's a short turnaround, coming home Friday. We know the weather. We know the travel situations are going to be bad. Having to deal with that twice in a 36-hour period is tough. Then I also look and make sure those other situations are okay. Cleveland State, 0-7 on the road, 1-6 ATS. Northern Kentucky, 2-0 straight up in ATS at home. There's a team that can take care of the action. I think Northern Kentucky, again, even though this is a situational play, I'm going to put a line at 7, 8, 9, and I'm going to say that I'm going to make this my situational play as Northern Kentucky is minus 11 or less. I'm not just going to blindly give it out. The line has to be in place for that to be the play, but I think the line will clearly be under that. I'm going to call it a situational play on Northern Kentucky minus 11 or less.
Yeah, that was something I talked about on yesterday's show, actually, because there was a perfect situation in the NHL that sort of, I mean, it's set up as one that I had circled on Sunday. I knew that it was something that I wanted to take a deeper look at, and it just the price didn't come out where I wanted it to. And as much as these situations line up, as great as this stuff looks, it's also price dependent, as you just said. And I think that's something really important, you know, for our listeners to understand and for any handicapper to learn, because you know, it still all comes down to the number, whether it's a price or a money line. You know, it's that important that, you know, it still has to be in your target range, like you just said.
Exactly. And, you know, you can't, when you have a 10-point favorite, you can certainly let up. You're looking at a 15, 16-point lead, and there's 3 minutes left, and you're emptying your bench, and the opposing team's coming down, hitting a few baskets. So you have to leave yourself enough leeway in there to allow some backdoor coverage, and I think we did with that number. So, you know, I'm very happy with that. And if it's one more point, you know, I would still look at it, and then I would start making that determination, but I just wanted to give a clear number for the readers. The other play was going to be the technical play. Now, you know, the technicals are going to change. Again, we went from non-conference to conference, and again, I'm going to go to a smaller conference. I think there's more value. The lines aren't as close. If you get a situation where there's a potential injury, the lines don't move like they would if a player from Kentucky gets hurt. But this is going to the West Coast Conference, and it's going to be San Diego at Pepperdine. You know, San Diego 7-7 on the year, Pepperdine 4-10. And Pepperdine is actually the better team. They played a tougher schedule. So I think Pepperdine will clearly be favored by probably 5 or 6 points. But San Diego, a fantastic road team, they're 2-4. Straight up on the road against a tough schedule. They're 6-0 ATS. Pepperdine at home, 2-2, but they're 0-4. Now, another situation I'm going to add to that is San Diego has a second-year head coach, Lamont Smith. He graduated and played at San Diego, came back last year. They had 9 wins. They're an improved team. So I'm going to add that into that play. And I like when a second-year head coach is going into conference play in his second season. It's a huge edge, and you don't look at last year's results nearly as much when he has a year under his belt as experience. And on the other side of that, Pepperdine went to the postseason last year. That was their second straight year they went to the postseason, and the first time since 2002 they went and played postseason action and back. Well, now they have pressure. You're starting a conference play. You played well in your conference two straight years. You're starting to fight inflated lines because people expect more of you, and I'm going to play against them. San Diego plus the points. As long as we're getting five or more, that's going to be my technical play of the week.
Well, some really good thoughts there. Great breakdowns and analysis from Ralph Michaels of WagerTalk.com. We already mentioned the guide. What else do you have going on over there?
You know, nothing. It's just a good week. I had a poor week this past week. Some customers were with me, and I added some time, those that took advantage of my special. And, you know, those bad weeks happen. You have to be consistent in this game. There's a lot of action in college basketball. The best handicappers have great weeks. The best handicappers have losing weeks. Bounced back a 2-1 night last night. Happy to do that. Follow me. Get the guide this week. Take a look at it. Great information. Absolutely free. It's up every Tuesday. And we're looking at a big play mid next week. We'll see what happens with that.
Again, Ralph Michaels of WagerTalk.com. You follow him on Twitter at CalSportsLV. Ralph, thank you so much for your time, man. We really appreciate it. I'll talk to you again next week, bud.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, a good segment there. Some really strong thoughts on college basketball and how to break down some of those games and some of the things that you're looking for. Coming up on our Friday edition of Bang the Book Radio, looks like we'll be joined by Chris Stone of FanSided. We'll talk with him about some college basketball stuff. Still making sure that we can get that in. He's been very busy here lately. I've been trying to get him on the show because he's a great college basketball writer. Hopefully we can get some thoughts from him. But also, we're going to be recording this afternoon with Rounding Again, who won 2015 Westgate Super Contest and then finished third with his new name, Anton Chigurh, I believe it is, reference to No Country for Old Men, finished third in this year's Super Contest, tied for third, but still finished third. So we'll chat with him about his experiences in the Super Contest, some of his strategies. Of course, he's not going to divulge everything because he can't do that. But we'll talk with him about what movie reference may be part of his next name, all kinds of stuff like that. So really looking forward to that segment with him. And then also we'll have a quick segment with Brent from DSI Sportsbook looking at some of the action for the College Football Playoff National Championship game and the wild card weekend here in the NFL playoffs. So thank you very much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.